Today's reading is taken from 2 Kings, chapter 5, verses 1 to 14, and can be found on page 346 in the Old Testament section, that's the front section of the Bibles. And it's the healing of Naaman. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man and in high favor with his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man, though a mighty warrior, suffered from leprosy. Now the Arameans, on one of their raids, had taken a young girl captive from the land of Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my Lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his Lord just what the girl from the land of Israel had said. And the king of Aram said, "Go then, and I will send along a letter to the king of Israel." He went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of garments. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you my..." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to give death or life that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Just look and see how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent a message to the king. "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come to me that he may learn that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and halted at the entrance of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, "Go wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh shall be restored and you shall be clean." But Naaman became angry and went away saying, "I thought that for me he would surely come out and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and would wave his hand over the spot and cure the leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" He turned and went away in a rage. But his servants approached and said to him, "Father, if the prophet had commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? How much more when all he said to you was wash and be clean?" So he went down and immersed himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. His flesh was restored like the flesh of a young boy, and he was clean.
Amazing, wonderful, loving God. God whose love reaches beyond boundaries, across barriers, and pushes aside prejudice. Speak to us now, Lord. Give us ears to hear and hearts that are open to receive. Amen. They came in the night. All was peacefully quiet, the whole village asleep, except for a couple of watchmen who had their throats slit so as not to make them scream. The first the girl knew was when she heard shouting and then the hooves of horses, loud bangs. She tried to run. A mother urged her and her brothers, "Run, run!" And she did, but she was grabbed by strong arms, lifted high on horseback by a laughing brute. All around her was chaos, confusion, carnage. Homes set ablaze, children screaming, men slaughtered as they tried to protect their property. And the last thing she saw as the horses galloped away, flames engulfing her village and bodies littering the ground. The terrified girl held on to the brute, and life was never going to be the same. from a happy, carefree life in a small village outside of Jerusalem, playing among the chickens, the little goats and the sheep of her family, hearing the stories of how God had rescued them from slavery in Egypt and how they had to keep telling the story and remembering that. Her mother cooking delicious food, celebrating life together in safety and in joy. Now she finds herself captive in a foreign land. Now everything is strange. They worship wooden gods here with strange names. They eat strange food. They have strange customs. But she's no time to fret about this. For her, captivity is slavery. She is one of the spoils of war, handed over as a gift to the household of a Syrian general to please his wife, to do her bidding. Her mother had taught her well. She was able to clean and cook. She knew how to serve. She could mend. She won the trust of these very strange people very quickly. Now, she could have been bitter. She had every right to be. These were her people's enemies. She'd been taken to a foreign land. Her parents probably killed. They'd destroyed everything the little girl loved. But when she saw her master so afflicted with that dreadful disease, in her homeland, he would have been an outcast. He would have been made to live away from everyone else. She had a heart that was full of love, and it ached to see him so badly damaged. He, the great man, the man who had power and control, now had no power. No control. He couldn't order this affliction to go. This affliction wouldn't obey him. Now he's powerless. He's no authority over this thing. It proceeded to creep over his body and worsening by the day. He tried everything, everyone, to rid himself of it. And then his wife came and said, "The girl, she knows someone who could help you." A girl? She knows a prophet in Samaria. Could this really be? He's so desperate now and so longing to be free of this disease. He goes to seek him out with the blessing and the gifts of his own king. And first he goes to the king of Israel, who's terrified and thinks it's a trick. What a wimp. But Elisha heard. Elisha says, "Send him to me. I'll help him. He'll see the glory of God working in me. He'll know that I'm a prophet." So he went, this great man, to a humble home and sees a humble man, and he's perplexed. And even more so when he's ordered to wash in a river, especially an Israeli river. His men knew how desperate he was, though, and perhaps they saw something in Elisha too. Something special, something unusual. But they ran after him and said, "Just do as he says." And he was cured. God's kingdom of wholeness and wellness breaking through. A little girl with a big heart and a man who served God, who sought only to do God's will. Who knew he could do good for God, knew that God's kingdom could be displayed here on earth. But this little girl is just acting because she cared. And what is so wonderful to me about this whole story is the way it starts with the heart. "I know someone who can help you." And this from a slave who commanded those who had killed her family, her people, who had plundered her land, who had taken them all, everything she knew and everything she loved. But her heart was moved by his affliction. Well, it's this act of compassion, this loving service, crossing boundaries, that tells us of God's power, that it isn't confined to those who he'd called to be his people. It reaches beyond walls and territories. And so I'm reminded straight away of Jesus and the stories that are told in our Gospels. Stories of how Jesus helped people, of how he stopped what he was doing to help people. How he broke rules. What a rule breaker Jesus was. How he leapt over prejudices, pushed them aside. How he helped those that seemed to be beyond help, right on the margins. How he helped foreigners, how he went into foreign territories. And two particular instances today come to mind. The first is the centurion. You might have remembered the story of the centurion, the Roman centurion. He sent some Jewish elders because he was too ashamed to go to Jesus himself because he thought he wasn't worthy enough. And he had a sick servant who he treasured so much. And he'd heard what Jesus could do, and he humbled himself and asked Jesus for help, and Jesus helped him. Loving service, crossing boundaries, moved by the helplessness of this man. And then there was the Syrophoenician woman, you might remember. She went down on her knees. She was groveling in the dirt to Jesus. So desperate she was, as you would be for your child. Her daughter was ill, and she even answered him back. She got lippy with him. Yet his heart was moved and he healed a child. This shows God's compassion in action. Whoever they are, if they're calling out to him, if they've got belief, even if it's only tinsy, wincy, that big, he'll respond because his love is for all, regardless of race, sphere of influence, heights of power, be they rich, be they poor. And it also shows us that it's us ordinary people, like the little girl, who carry his message of love and compassion to others. That acting in obedience, like Elisha, knowing his God could be trusted, that he would be glorified, acted to help. Being braver than the king of Israel, trusting God to reach. When we've known God, when we've experienced his transforming love, when he's walked with us, when Jesus has walked with us in tough times, perhaps when we've been facing an illness that frightened us, perhaps when we were alone and it seemed like nobody else was with us. When we've known that love in action, why wouldn't we want that for everyone else? Why wouldn't we want other people's lives to be transformed? Even, maybe especially, those people who act out of hatred. Well, Julia was someone like that. Julia was a GP, a very clever woman, really good at her job, in control of her life, highly organised, very intelligent. Tiny toddler comes along, newborn baby comes along, never stops crying. Husband's working away from home, no family living nearby. We know about sleep deprivation, many of us, what that does to your mind, what that does to your focus. Suddenly, Julia's at breaking point and feels like she can't go on. She's so exhausted, the family are now living on chocolate digestives. Her qualifications, her intelligence, her sphere of influence suddenly has no control. She can't order the exhaustion to go. She can't command this baby to sleep. The washing up in the sink is piling up and she feels she's sinking under the weight. And then suddenly the doorbell rings and there stands Elsie from the local church, the last person on earth she probably wanted to see. But Elsie has a basket and she says, "I thought you might appreciate this." And Julia lifts the tea towel that's on this little old-fashioned basket and sees a lasagna and an apple crumble. And she bursts into tears. It was 2 hours before Elsie left. Meanwhile, Julia had had a cup of tea, the first time that she'd had one sitting down without a baby in her arms. Elsie had rocked the baby to sleep, who Julia had begun to think was actually the spawn of Lucifer. And finally, it had slept. And she'd washed the huge pile of pots in the sink and just listened. And then Elsie went away. And she did some ringing round and she did some knocking on doors. And she got half a dozen women together and they cooked for Julia and her family for a week, and every day they took a meal round. Some of them stayed to chat because they were just like that. Some of them weren't like that, just dropped off the food and went. It was 3 years later, at least, before Julia, at another church, a church her and her husband had moved to, stood at the front of her church and testified about this. And she said this: "Those meals from Elsie saved me. That lady with her brisk, caring attitude brought me hope in a desperate situation, and I remembered that God could be trusted. That, to me, was love in action." That day, as she gave a testimony, she launched a service called Meals for Mums, and she rallied in that church there 20 people who cooked meals for anyone who'd had a baby, anyone, whether in the parish or not. One meal every day for a whole week. A big ask, but they did it. The service eventually expanded, and is still running now, to cover people who were ill or recovering from surgery. Anyone could be referred from anywhere. No questions asked. Now, sometime later, so the story goes on, sometimes later, about 4 years later on, there's another church down south, miles away. Could be in some area if it's down south, couldn't it, really? A man turned up for Alpha the night it started. And, you know, there's a bit in Alpha that says, you know, why have you come here? Why have you turned up? And he said, well, I've never believed. I'm not sure I do now. But I went to visit my married daughter recently, who lives up north, and she'd had an accident, hurt her back really badly, and the family were really struggling. And she told me that the local church, which she didn't go to, brought them a cooked meal every night, and they'd done that for a fortnight. And one of the women came while I was there, and I found out that they'd even been taking her kids to school every day. And I said to the woman, told me, well, I do. Now, a lot of people, this man says, might laugh at that. They might think it's all a bit silly. But I need to find out what it is about that makes you do that for a complete stranger. Because my daughter's never set foot in a church. She still doesn't go now. Why would anyone do that for her? A chain of human kindness started by an elderly Christian lady who thought it would be a nice thing to do to take that nice doctor, that young mum, a hot meal. A whole social service is established, which in turn leads to a man many miles away seeking out the real meaning of life. And look what God does with a very simple act. Well, that, I think, is what's meant by tend, our mark of mission that we're looking at today. It means to respond to those who are in need. And Tom Wright, very clever man, a bishop, he writes, "We, the church, are called to be God's creation. We're called to be agents of change here and now. We're called to model and display that new creation in symphonies and family life, in restorative justice and poetry, in holiness and in service to the poor and needy." Service to the poor and needy. There are so many poor and needy all around us. And some of them are on the other side of the boundaries that we've erected. And some of them, most of them, will be on the margins. And some of them will smell really bad. And we, the disciples of Jesus, talk about wanting to be like him. We're his disciples. Well, he spent most of his time with those who were poor and needy. He spent most of his time with the marginalized, the sick, the people that nobody wanted to be with, the outcasts. His love transcended barriers. He was with people who smelt. He reached those considered unworthy. Where do we spend our time? If we truly want to be like Jesus, we will long to respond to that need that's out there. We will be seeking out ways to help those in need. We will act as a church to alleviate suffering and loneliness. And we won't care much about boundaries. We won't care much about what colour people are. We won't care much about what sexuality they are. We will just want to help and respond to their need. It won't matter what their beliefs are or whether they have any belief. We will work to bring about reconciliation. We'll work to help people find peace. We'll help people to form and maintain relationships. If we truly want to reflect the image of Jesus, we'll provide a welcome that goes way beyond a smile and a cup of tea and a biscuit. We'll take relationships seriously if we want to be like Jesus. We'll strive for this community to be a family where all feel like they're part of something and all feel like they belong and all feel like they're loved. And if we truly want to be like Jesus, we'll have time for people. We'll stop and we'll listen when they need listening to. We'll look at what they need. We'll value what gifts they can offer and provide a place for their gifts to flourish. And if we truly want to be like Jesus, we'll respect the humanity of other people, even if we don't like them, even if they smell really, really bad. And even when they're different to us, we'll afford them dignity and respect. And if we want to show the love of God and be like Jesus, we might even want to serve at Shine. We'll invite our friends to these free events. Perhaps we'll even take a turn at serving coffee and tea after the service one day, or greet people on the door. Well, perhaps we'll even call on our neighbours and check that they're all right and ask what we can do for help. We will always, if we want to be like Jesus, if we want to reflect the love of Jesus, be saying to people, how can we serve you, my brother and my sister? What do you want me to do for you? How can we feed you today? The needs of others will become important to us if we want to reflect Jesus. That is, if we really do seek to reflect Jesus, if we really do want to bring glory to God, if we really do want to show that his love actually really is for everyone.